Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 385, titled Formula for Disaster, being recorded on October 27th of 2002. Before I get into the main substance of the broadcast, let me remind you that there will be a detailed annotated article-length description of this program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast. Also bear in mind that sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio, more recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word. Older shows for download only on a longer URL linked to both the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website. More about that later in the program. Now, every once in a while, I have to sort of venture out beyond the explored domain, so to speak, politically, or at least explored past a point, and present something that will appear controversial or perhaps crazy to some people. And I want to stress very strongly that this is one of those broadcasts. This entire broadcast is conjectural in nature. This is speculation. And I want to stress very, very strongly that the book from which I will be reading in this broadcast, a novel, a fact-based novel called The Formula by Steve Shagan, made into a major motion picture in 1980, starring George C. Scott and Marlon Brando, among others. I want to stress that this broadcast is speculative. This novel is termed a blockbuster novel founded in fact on the promotional material on the back of the promotional text on the back of the broadcast, or on the back of the novel, excuse me. I believe that this book, which is credited, the acknowledgments I will read to you as follows. The author wishes to express his gratitude to the staff of the United States Mission Berlin Documentation Center. This book, I believe to be not only based on fact, but I believe that it accurately reflects, either coincidentally or otherwise, what may very well be the pivot point of modern industrial existence, and what may ultimately turn out to be the situation upon which the fate of the human race and the planet itself depends. I realize that that is bombastic. Let me go back to some information that I've spoken about in past broadcasts. First of all, Miscellaneous Archive Show M11, recorded back in 1980 when this novel came out, or when the motion picture came out. That's Uncle Sam and the Swastika, and it deals with, among other things, the standard IG agreement of 1929. We came back to this in a number of different broadcasts, including For the Record program number 341, titled The Ties That Bind. The standard IG agreement was arguably the most important cartel agreement of the 20th century between what are and were the two most important industrial concerns on Earth, namely Standard Oil of New Jersey and the IG Farb and Chemical Cartel in Germany. As discussed in Miscellaneous Archive Show M11 and as reprised in For the Record 341, the standard IG agreement basically entailed this. IG Farben, the Nazi chemical cartel, after the war broken up into Hoechst, Bayer, BASF, and AGFA, the IG Farben company had been working on the hydrogenation process in order to take advantage of Germany's huge coal reserves and to enable Germany to synthesize gasoline or synthesize oil from coal. This would have given the growing German industrial and military machine the capacity to function without petroleum reserves, which Germany did not have. Because of the tremendous expense sunk into the R&D of the hydrogenation process, IG Farben was in tough shape financially, and in turn, Standard Oil took a look at the hydrogenation process and recognized that this had the potential to undermine its profit base simply by permitting countries to free themselves from oil in order to operate their industrial machine. What IG Farben and Standard Oil of New Jersey did was to effect what was basically a debt equity swap. IG Farben was given 2% of the stock in Standard Oil. It ultimately became not only the second largest stockholder in Standard Oil behind the Rockefeller family, but as we've looked at in a number of past broadcasts, including For the Record 294, the Borman organization, using the Hermann Schmitz Trust — Hermann Schmitz was the head of IG Farben — ultimately became as large a stockholder, according to Paul Manning, in Standard Oil as the Rockefeller family. So basically, IG Farben gets a huge block of Standard stock, and this gives them the capital to survive. They also received the rights to market, under this cartel agreement, synthetically produced oil derived from coal within Germany only. Now, Standard Oil of New Jersey got the rights to use the hydrogenation process, and these were exclusive rights, to synthesize oil from coal all over the rest of the world. So this basically assured the profit positions and the survivability of IG Farben and Standard Oil of New Jersey. It again was one of the most important cartel, arguably the most important cartel agreement of the 20th century, between what were arguably the two most important industrial concerns of that century and perhaps this one, although IG is now several different companies. In For the Record program 278, Connecting the Dots, I dealt with the issues that were turning around the CDU funding scandal and the collaboration between the Thiessen Industrial Firm, which, as we've seen in numerous broadcasts, was inextricably linked with the Bush family, and the French oil firm ELF in attempting to gain control of the Leuna, formerly East Germany, Leuna, that was used, it was the principal IG Farben synthetic oil plant during World War II. In For the Record 278, we dealt with the Battle of Leuna, in which the 8th Army Air Force basically bombed the Leuna plant and ultimately forced Nazi Germany to its knees by knocking out its synthetic oil capability. When the Third Reich failed to capture the Caucasus in World War II, it was dependent on synthetic oil for its fuel. And it did so successfully throughout the war. But because the hydrogenation process was not sufficiently efficient, so to speak, to make it economically competitive on a price basis with naturally produced oil that was drilled from the ground, IG Farben was forced to use slave labor, and it was not an economically competitive process at that point. What this novel, The Formula, by Steve Shagan, is about the geopolitical and global and economic maneuvering around a formula for a catalyst developed by IG Farben in this novel that made the production of fuel, of gasoline, of oil from coal, much more efficient and consequently made it economically competitive with naturally produced oil. In addition, the hydrogenation process and the mangan formula from the Genesis Project, and again, that's in this novel, and it is a novel, could be used to produce methanol from wood and from grain. What this novel is about is a detective in the Los Angeles Police Department, Barney Kane, who is maneuvered by the international oil cartel into tracking down the surviving IG Farben scientists who were aware of the mangan formula developed by the Genesis Project. And again, those two are technically fictional concepts. In order to eliminate the dissemination of the formula. Now, I believe, and I want to stress emphatically, that this novel is in fact based on fact and either constitutes projection on the part of Steve Shagan or perhaps inside knowledge of one kind or another that was too hot, so to speak, to be released. Note again, this novel was published in soft cover in 1979 and was made into a major motion picture released later that same year. The formula authored by Steve Shagan, was published by Bantam Books in soft cover, ISBN 0-553-13801-4. And it's copyright 1979, and the hardcover edition published in September of 1979. Now, consider that the formula would have basically been the key to the entire industrialized world. First of all, oil-producing countries such as the former Soviet Union and the OPEC countries of the Middle East and Venezuela and Mexico, for example, would have been held prisoner to the formula, because if the formula had been released, then it would have permitted countries, industrial countries all over the world, to free themselves from having to get oil from the countries that produced oil. By the same token, the formula also would have threatened fundamentally the profit position of the oil companies themselves, because if it gets out, then countries all over the world can produce oil from coal, and beyond that they can produce, at least according to this novel, they can produce methanol more efficiently. That formula would have been the key to the control of the entire industrialized world and of much of the third world as well. It would have been the key to the control of the world. And I believe that the formula is based in fact, but I want to stress this is conjectural, so please note that in the most emphatic sense. But for those who would poo-poo the concept of such a thing, what would be actually crazy, frankly, would be to assume that in 1929, the year of the great stock market crash, a major cartel agreement would be concluded between the two largest and most important industrial concerns on Earth for the manipulation of a substance which is the key to contemporary history, namely oil, and that in all of the time since then, 73 years since then, and with all of the advances in organic chemistry, genetic engineering, and human technology, that if not a precise catalytic formula, that some sort of technological development would not have been perfected that would have made the use of naturally produced oil dug out of the ground or drilled out of the ground obsolete under the circumstances. To assume that such an advance would not have been made is crazy, and one should remember that IG Farben, and in particular its Leuna plant in what ultimately was to become East Germany, was the focal point of major maneuvering between the Thyssen firm, the French oil firm ELF, and Saudi Arabia, which was going to be getting tanks from the Thyssen firm. And this triangular deal in turn was linked to the Belgian holding company, the Luxembourg-based holding company, that linked to Bertelsmann and a whole series of other connections. Again, due to the complex nature of this broadcast, I cannot but refer listeners to the other broadcasts. Please pursue those. But note again that this broadcast is speculative and that it is based on what I believe is essentially factual novel, but one that could only be presented as a novel at this time. Whether there is inside information that was disseminated or simply intelligent speculation by Steve Shagan, that remains to be seen. But we are now going to proceed into this particular novel. The central character, and again, I believe that this is far more than a novel, but please note all of the advisories that have been cited. Now, the central character here is Barney Kane, and he was played in the movie by George C. Scott. He is a Los Angeles police detective who is lured by a guy named Adam Stifel, played by Marlon Brando in the movie, and the head of a major oil company, Tidal Oil. That's a fictional oil company in the novel and book. He is lured by Adam Stifel and the oil cartel into tracking down the surviving IG Farben scientists who had helped with the Genesis Project. That was the development of the formula to make the hydrogenation process more efficient and to give Germany the fuel it needed to continue the war in World War II. The Mangan formula is the specific catalytic formula. And another of the characters about whom you will hear is the head IG Farben scientist named Esau in this book. Dr. Esau is dying of cancer and makes some disclosures to Barney Kane as Barney Kane is tracking down these scientists who survived and knew of the formula, and they were being murdered one by one. It turns out that the oil cartel and Adam Stiefel were deliberately using Kane's superlative detective abilities to track down these surviving scientists. You'll also hear of a fellow named Diestel, Friedrich Diestel, and that is a fellow about whom we will hear more in a minute. Now, of the formula, let's begin with a discussion of the confrontation near the end of the book between Adam Stiefel of Tidal Oil and Barney Kane. And it turns out that a Swiss consortium had access to the formula, and that, of course, is where many of the financial connections of IG Farben were based, and also where a lot of Saudi oil money was being banked, Saudi oil wealth, I should say, was being banked. Let's jump into the novel. Barney Stiefel says, "The Swiss consortium had the means to make the formula viable to go into the mass production of synthetic fuel. We couldn't tolerate that, but we couldn't be overt. We needed a cover." Barney nodded. "And what could be a better cover for killing German citizens than their involvement with an American cop pursuing an American crime?" The old man nodded. "Yes, we used you right from the start," unquote. The impact of Stiefel's words struck Barney with a deadening force. He fell silent for a moment, his mind racing back over past events. The old man sucked and chewed on the wet end of his cigar. He seemed to be enjoying Barney's dissolution. "Ah, don't take it personally, boy," Stiefel said. "After all, you were out of your milieu. You were a pawn, a soldier being moved by a master," unquote. Barney felt a ball of heat collecting in his throat. "I halfway suspected it after I met with Diestel. He was too open. He cloaked it behind his Nazi philosophy, but he overplayed his hand. I was sure after Siebold led me to Rymek." Those are two of the Genesis scientists who were murdered. "I just didn't want to believe someone was maneuvering all those people," Barney sighed. "I should have known you were calling the shots once Clements was hit." And then speaking of Friedrich Diestel, again, he is one of the characters. More about that. There's a conversation here somewhat earlier in the book between Lehmanns, a German police detective who was working with Barney Kane, on the murder of these scientists. And Lehmanns tells him, "Your blonde German girlfriend and the mysterious Los Angeles brunette are one and the same. She's either PLO or connected to some splinter group, but she's a terrorist recruited by someone who wants to keep the Genesis formula off the market. The Arabs would obviously have similar interests," unquote. Barney's response was calm and shaded by utter desolation. "I guess that's the ballgame." "Not quite. We found Diestel's private phone number in Lisa Spangler's apartment, which means she was planted by Diestel." "What the hell for?" Barney asked. "To have minute-by-minute knowledge of your progress. Remember, Diestel still controls the surviving members of the Genesis team. It's the strong arm of the Kameradschaft." "The what?" Barney asked. "The Fraternal Order of SS, Lehmanns replied. "Which means Diestel ordered Obermann and Siebold to see me," Barney offered. "And to direct you to Esau," Lehmanns added. "It also proves that Diestel knew you were coming to Berlin, and that you had Obermann's name in your possession," unquote. And of the relationship between Adam Stiefel's Tidal Oil and the aforementioned Diestel, head of the Kameradschaft, the SS, basically a branch of Odessa. "What about Diestel?" Barney asked. "He was our man in Berlin. He was a high corporate officer of a West German firm that we do business with. He held the Fraternal Order of the SS in his hand. He was most useful," unquote. And again, this obviously corresponds rather closely to reality. Now, in the book, Barney Kane tracks down Dr. Esau, the head of the IG Farben synthetic oil program, and the fellow who actually developed the Mangan formula from the Genesis Project, and in this, they discuss what basically happened after the war. Barney asks him, "You never revealed the final formula?" This, by the way, to the Soviets who had captured Esau in the novel. "Never. They knew we made oil from coal through hydrogenation. They knew it was costly and required slave labor. But they did not know we had perfected the ultimate catalyst." Unquote. Esau's lips drew back in a self-satisfied grin, and Barney permitted the old man a moment of victorious reminiscence before he asked, "What happened to the formula?" Rymick probably informed you of the clandestine meeting in the old Adlon Hotel, did he not? Yes, Barney added. The convoy containing the formula was captured by the Americans. They, in turn, sent it to the British in Hamburg, unquote. Barney craved a cigarette, but did not dare smoke in the presence of Esau, who seemed to have trouble drawing enough oxygen to speak. "I know about that convoy," Barney said. "What I'm asking you, Doctor, is what happened to the formula after the war?" And skipping down, Dr. Esau answers him, "The answer to your question is obvious, is it not?" He sucked the stale air, again quoting here, "After the oil embargo of 73, all the oil reserves of the seven major American companies increased in value by 400%. OPEC is their creation. They have joined with large banking interests and armament manufacturers to prevent the manufacture of synthetic fuel. Of course, there's a conspiracy." His voice trembled and rose. "They will continue to withhold synthetic fuel until their profit position is assured." Unquote. Skipping down, Barney asked, "You keep referring to they. Who are they?" "The cartel," Esau rasped. "They have maintained my life because I possess the formula." He leaned back. "They permitted me to stay alive because I agreed to withhold its publication. And should I die under abnormal circumstances, that formula would be delivered to certain Swiss industrial interests." Unquote. And then, skipping down still further, Dr. Esau discusses yet another application of this catalyst. "And that catalyst not only produced motor fuel from coal at an economic price, but also produced methanol. Yes, methanol, the magic substance that will fuel the energy requirements of future mankind." "Why do you call methanol magic?" Barney asked. "Because it can be made from wood, trees, pulp, grain. It only requires that a car have no carburetor, but rather a fuel injector. It produces no pollutants. It burns cleanly, producing no carbon buildup on the engine. It requires only the planting and replanting of trees and wheat." He paused. "And along with regular fuel, my formula permits," he gasped and wheezed for breath, "permits synthesized petrochemical products completely uncontaminated by sulfur. Of course, immediate production would be made from coal, but then wood and grain will take over." By the way, I would note that, again, this novel came out in 1979, the movie in 1980, or perhaps a little earlier. And take a look at what's happening today. Notice how Bush basically wants to cut down all the forests. Not that this hasn't been going on before, but give George W. Bush a forest fire, and he will use it as an excuse to cut down trees. Again, please note, in the most emphatic fashion, that this broadcast is speculative in nature, but I think there's a whole lot more going on here than just speculation. Still further in this broadcast, let's go to yet another conversation here between Adam Stifel and Barney Kane. Barney nodded and lit a cigarillo. He blew some smoke at the copper ceiling. He paced for a moment, then turned to Stifel. "How did Tedesco fit in?" He was a gangster, by the way. "We commissioned him to engage the PLO gunmen. Tedesco informed them of Genesis, and their interest in suppressing the production of synthetic fuel is obvious. The involvement of the Muslim terrorists provided us with a further cover." Again, I would note that I believe that many sides are involved in this, and that a lot of the people don't necessarily know they're being used as a cover. And I would emphasize most emphatically that one should avoid a monocausal analysis of this. But rather, I believe that the formula is almost certainly something that exists, or something approximate to that, and that it is one of the major pivot points of contemporary history. Still later, Adam Stifel and Barney Kane are talking near the end of this book. And we resume with the conversation. Stifel walked up to the big glass window, and Barney sat down in a chair facing the circular desk. "Don't feel too disheartened, son," Stifel said, turning to Barney. "We will manufacture synthetic fuel, and in great quantity. We already own most of the coal in the country. We know what's coming. We have the formula. We have the mangan catalyst, and we have the technology. But we must be certain of profit. By 1990, the country will be on its knees to OPEC. The government will then turn to us. And in their desperation, they will ensure our profit position in the manufacture of synthetic fuel." "Nice," Barney said. "Business," Stifel replied. "Just business." We crossed from the window and walked toward Barney. "We are a team of giants, nursing the lullaby of the masses." Stifel sat down on the sofa opposite Barney and peered across at him in the dim light. "You mustn't think of us as evil, rapacious men, clinging to the keys of our numbered Swiss accounts. On the contrary, we are a small family of simple businessmen seeking only the tranquil pursuit of profit, and we take great care to bestow sufficient largesse on the citizens." "Is this where you play the Star-Spangled Banner?" Barney asked. Stifel smiled. "I understand your anger, and therefore excuse it. You're an old-fashioned man, in a way, the epitome of the American myth of the rugged individual. And I respect that. I come from a long line of strong-willed men myself, but like it or not, the world has changed. You're a policeman. You cannot possibly understand the complexities of global economics," unquote. And skipping down and looking ahead to something, and I'm going to reprise this passage inside two of this program. Then, after that, Barney Kane asks him, "What happens when there's no more profit left to squeeze from the citizens, when the whole goddamn world is on its knees?" Barney asked angrily. The old man looked up at the ceiling for a moment, then stared at Barney. "In that case," he said, "the cartel performs its historic duty. We unleash the dogs of war. There are those times when war is both economically and ecologically necessary for the ultimate survival of the species," unquote. More about this in the second side of the program. Within a week of the broadcast of this program, there will be a detailed, annotated description of For the Record program number 385 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That website that is equipped with real audio so people can hear the two most recent segments that are being distributed to the stations that get this program. Note that stations that wish to air For the Record can contact Spitfire and they will receive CDs or tapes absolutely free. The Spitfire website, in turn, which will have the For the Record description in its own separate file, is linked to two websites that are maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only on a longer URL that is linked to both the Spitfire and the WFMU.org/Dave Emery websites. You can reach Spitfire by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Please note that as I speak on October 27th of 2002, the For the Record descriptions from 233 on that are footnoted are being reformatted and supplemented with text that I was not able to work into the original broadcasts due to limitations of time. Each of them has their own separate files, and they constitute a formidable body of information in and of themselves. We will get back to the focal point of this emphatically hypothetical discussion in the next side of this program. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 385, Formula for Disaster, being recorded on October 27th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.